The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Joining us for the Culture Club today, we have the writer Oisin McKenna, who has just published his first novel, Evenings and Weekends. Oisin, thank you very much for joining us. But I suspect there are many people who might know you as well from writing and performing theatre shows, particularly at things like the Dublin Fringe. So how have you switched from that to writing novels?
Yeah, sure. Well, hello. Thanks so much for having me today. So I had been making theatre and spoken word performance work probably for a little bit under 10 years at the time that I started writing a novel. I started writing the book in 2019. I'd just finished touring a theatre show called Admin at that stage. And I think I was getting a little bit frustrated with, I'd been making theatre shows for a while, but I was really interested in reaching bigger audiences and more diverse audiences than typically I was meeting through the theatre world. And I was also kind of coming to realize that most of the work that I was really inspired by were novels, you know, and that had kind of always been the case. I'd always had a quite particular taste in theatre, but I didn't see that much work that I really was really excited by, but I read a lot of novels that I really loved. So it felt like I was confident enough artistically to be able to take on writing a novel, which I don't think I did feel before. And I also felt that professionally I was more able to sort of make it happen. I knew a little bit more about the sort of, you know, creative world in a way that I didn't really when I was starting out. So it felt like the right time. Yeah, so that was kind of how it happened.
And tell us about Evenings and Weekends. What's the story?
Yeah, sure. So I'd say it's a community drama. It's set in London over the course of one weekend in 2019. And it follows an ensemble cast of characters throughout the city on that weekend. So there's kind of a few things happening. So one of them is that there's a whale stuck in the Thames River, which is a kind of a big viral news story that weekend, particularly because there's a marine biologist who is in charge of the rescue operation of the whale, but she looks uncannily like Princess Diana. She becomes a sort of viral sensation, big news story. And lots of different characters throughout the city follow that news story while there's quite big changes happening in a lot of their lives. So for instance, one of the main characters is somebody called Maggie. She's 30 and pregnant, and she can't afford to raise the child in London. So she's moving back to her hometown. This is her last weekend in the city. She doesn't know that her partner, Ed, has got a sort of secret history of hooking up with men, including her best friend, Phil. Phil, meanwhile, is living in a big sort of warehouse commune in South London and is having this ambiguous but very exciting relationship with his housemate, Keith, while Phil's mother, Rosaline, who's an Irish woman who moved to London in the 70s, has been diagnosed with cancer, and she's traveling into the city this weekend to tell Phil about it. So it's at this big precipice for a lot of their lives during which a big, big change could happen for a lot of them, but there's quite a lot at stake.
Sounds like that you might have the basis of a screenplay there as well, is it, for a TV series or a movie?
Yeah, I'd really love if that would happen. I definitely, when I was writing it, there were certain scenes that I wrote with a sort of cinematic idea in mind. But there's nothing confirmed yet. But hopefully that'll happen. I'd really like it.
And did you draw on your own experience of moving from Dublin to London at around a similar time?
Yeah, I did. So I moved to London in 2017, and that was a really, really exciting time in my life. When I moved to London, my world changed in a lot of ways. It opened up in a lot of ways, like socially, professionally. It was a very exciting time and difficult as well. Like it's very expensive to live. It was like hard to make a life here, and I felt really, really excited by the city, but also that like it was all like I always felt there was all this possibility, but that possibility was always being kind of thwarted. So like it felt like something really big could happen, especially on a hot day, but that was kind of hampered by the kind of constant needs to like earn money, keep my head above the water. So it was definitely inspired by that experience. I really wanted to kind of capture the excitement of the city, but also like the difficulty of living here.
Let's go to your culture club choices. And yes, we ask everyone for the first single they can remember buying. What's yours?
So mine was Britney Spears, Baby One More Time, which I was hugely excited about when it came out at first. I would have been maybe, I think I was maybe seven or eight. And I was in primary school, and I remember there was a sort of like talent show thing, and there were some girls who like performed like a lip sync to that song, and I'd never heard it before. And as soon as I heard it, I was like, "Oh my god, what is this? Like amazing sound, you know?" And I guess I was like a child, which I guess was sort of the target audience for that song, you know. But it was, yeah. I mean, it was the first time that I remember really loving music, and I felt like it was a sensation that I'd never really felt before, like feeling so excited and moved by something. And you know, I still think it's really amazing. And actually, when I was a kid, I really wanted to, well, after you know Britney Spears came out, I really wanted to become a pop star, which obviously has not happened. But when I was a kid, though, I kind of started writing, you know, kind of song lyrics in my copybook at school with the dream of becoming a pop star, and that ended up kind of being some of my early kind of experiences in writing and writing poetry, which you know stayed with me throughout my life, even if I never became a pop star.
Well, let's remind ourselves of what Britney Spears and "Hit Me, Baby, One More Time" sounded like. Britney Spears, Baby One More Time. So there's a crossovering between your favourite bands and favourite albums. So I'm going to start with the bands, because you've named three for us: The Knife, Fontaines DC and Bad Bunny. Tell us why you've made those choices.
Yeah, so I guess I suppose for different reasons. I'd start with The Knife, I suppose, and that they're a band that they're probably the band that I've loved for like the longest period of time in my life. I think I started listening to them when I was probably about 15. I had a friend in school, his name was Cahill, and he had a car and used to drive us around places, and he was really into them. So he was always playing their CD in his car. And they've kind of stayed with me, you know, since then. Their singer has a solo project called Fever Ray, which I really, really love as well. And they've kind of, I guess they, yeah, they've been, they've kind of soundtracked a lot of key moments to my life. Like, I really love that their music is quite experimental in some ways, it kind of experimental electronic music, but with a real sort of pop sensibility, which I think is something that I really like in fiction, you know, film, TV, like the work that's sort of on the cross sections of pop and experimental. So I think for those reasons, I really, really love The Knife.
Well, let's hear a little bit of The Knife, because we have a track called Heartbeats. We'll be right back. So that's Heartbeats by The Knife, one of Oisín McKenna's favourite bands. And the others that you do say is Fontaines D.C. and Bad Bunny.
Yeah, so with Fontaines D.C., they're obviously, you know, a more contemporary band. I guess their fourth album's coming out this year, but they've been, I'm not sure, maybe around for, I suppose, I don't know, six or 7 years now. But I got into them really when, after their second album came out, A Hero's Death, and I find their music, it's quite dark in some ways. It's got a sort of difficult and dark energy sometimes, but it's also in many ways very cathartic and euphoric. And I particularly got into them when I was like having quite a difficult time in my life, and I felt when I listened to that album, A Hero's Death, which is, I would say probably emotionally their darkest work. It's quite depressive almost, but kind of listening to that album during that time when I was really struggling, it kind of gave like a little space in my day, like every day. Like I'd listen to that album start to finish every day for like quite, you know, a number of months. And it kind of gave a space in my day each day during which I could, you know, sit in those like difficult feelings in a way that actually felt quite like protected, and it didn't feel sort of it kind of gave like a safe and like almost kind of supported feeling space every day to feel quite difficult things. So I feel, you know, very, very grateful to them for that. And I think they're an incredible band. I love all of their work.
Favorite albums? You've given us one by The Knife, Silent Shout, but the other two, Joanna Newsom, Have One on Me. Why have you picked that?
So that's an album again that I've really loved for a long time. It came out in 2010, and I mean, something I really like about Joanna Newsom is that when I heard her at first, I found her music actually quite abrasive. I mean, she's a very singular singer. She's got a singing voice which is a bit unlike anyone else, and she makes sort of like strange, like harp folk music. A lot of her songs are very long, they're quite epic, and I found her music really difficult when I heard it at first. My ear was really not like acclimatized to it, and it took like years of like hearing her music, just because sometimes other people I know would be into her and, you know, playing her music around at people's houses and stuff. And eventually when I did get into her, I was like, it suddenly clicked one day that I heard her music, and I was like, wow, this is so, so amazing. And I think because it took so long to get into, it felt like, you know, it's a bit like, you know, like Marmite or like red wine or whatever, which feel like can often like, you know, when you taste it at first, it can taste like quite like horrible. But once you get into it, it's like a very sort of like deep enjoyment. And Joanna Newsom was a bit like that for me. But her album Have One on Me is my favorite of her albums. It's really long. It's like 3 hours long, maybe. But it's so sort of emotionally varied, like really amazing, ambitious music, really beautiful lyrics. And it's very like some of it's quite complex, but a lot of it's very simple as well, like really like gorgeous ballads, very, very heartrending. And it tells like a really like quite, yeah, detailed story about like relationships, okay, love. Yeah.
Okay. And what about Hole? Live Through This?
Yeah. So Hole's Live Through This was my favorite album when I was a teenager. I first got into that when I was maybe 14 or so, and I still really, really love it. It's Hole being Courtney Love's band, and that this being their sort of their real sort of opus, which came out in 1994, very shortly after Courtney's husband Kurt Cobain died. And I find the music so incredibly like powerful and invigorating. Like her vocals are just so powerful. The lyrics are incredibly beautiful. It's really, really loud, quite like angry, but like, yeah, very, very sort of very thrilling, really. So yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan of that.
Let's hear a little bit from that album. Here's Violet.
Stars are just like little fish. You should learn when to go. You should learn how. My lips were red.
Hole. And just, Oisin McKenna, for your best gig, you've also gone for another very strong woman, Patti Smith, from the Electric Picnic of 2012.
Yeah, I love Patti Smith. I've seen her twice. That was my first time seeing her. The other time was at the Royal Hospital Kilmainham in 2015. But that first one in particular was so, so exciting. I was maybe 21 or something, and I was having, like, at that festival, I was having such a good time, and that was really sort of the highlight. I remember towards the end of the set, I think she finished with Because the Night and then finished on Gloria, and those two songs live back to back, having the best time of my life at a festival at 21, was just the most unbelievably, like, happy and euphoric experience. So yeah, I'll always remember that.
Well, actually, as it happens, her cover of Springsteen's Because the Night is one of my favourite tracks as well. Mm. And this is from the second time you saw her. This is actually from Kilmainham in 2018.
Right, you breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Patti Smith in Kilmainham in 2018. Best gig choice was the Electric Picnic one in 6 years earlier. So, Oisin, this is where we move off music, and we're going to start with movies. And you've given us a very recent movie, haven't you?
Yeah. So the movie I've chosen is the film After Sun, which just came out, I think, in 2022, at the end of 2022.
Yeah.
And that was a film that it really... I mean, I thought it was incredibly beautiful and resonated with me in a really deep way. And I felt actually as soon as I saw it that this was going to be one of my favorites forever. And I suppose I really loved how kind of subtle and quiet it is, but also incredibly beautiful, incredibly moving and funny. But I guess particularly for me, its handling of mental illness, I thought was incredibly insightful and well observed. And that was also, I think that the character in it that Paul Mescal plays, who's kind of, it's kind of implied that he's experiencing a sort of depression, but it's seen through the eyes of his, you know, 11-year-old daughter. So it's kind of not totally understood. But I think that the character in that film was around the same age as me, you know, at the time that I watched that film, and the kinds of experiences that he was having around depression, it was definitely something that I recognized in my own life as well. And I found it, you know, touched me in a very, very deep way. And I just thought it was like phenomenal storytelling. The soundtrack was beautiful, really beautifully shot. I really thought it was, you know, an incredible masterpiece, really, which, I think will stay with me forever.
Let's hear a little clip from it with Paul Mescal and Frankie Corio in Aftersun.
You don't mind, Amy?
No bother. Right, last one for now then, okay?
Do you want a game of gobbles?
Yeah, sure.
Got a built-in rest there.
No danger. I'm right-handed and I'm playing with a kid, right? Go easy.
Do you want a break or...?
Yeah.
Good. Well done.
So what's your sister's name?
Sophie.
Oh, nice.
I'm her dad, though, actually.
Sorry, mate, I just thought
that's
that.
Okay. It's a nice hotel, eh?
Oh, yeah, so what? I mean...
So that's After Sun. Favourite play, Oisin? What are you giving us?
So the play that I've chosen, it's a play called Triple Threat by the artist Lucy McCormack. And it's a little bit between a play, a cabaret show, and kind of a concert, but she's basically a London-based performance artist. She's done this show in, you know, it's toured all around. It's been on in Dublin, been on in Belfast, but it's basically a sort of pop cabaret extravaganza retelling of the New Testament, but in quite sort of irreverent and chaotic ways But also, it's what I really like about it is that it's kind of it's quite punk. It's quite a punk show, but with like an incredible level of like skill, like in terms of dancing skill, acting skill, like incredible comic timing, which is something that I really like. When I really like that in theater in particular, when something has a really sort of like anarchic, quite radical approach, but it pulls it off with like real like attention to detail, like really high quality work. And that's, yeah, I think that's one of the best examples of that I've ever seen. Would really, I'm not, it's not been on in a while, but if it ever comes back to town, I'd really recommend going to see it.
You mentioned at the outset how much you love reading, so give us some of your favorite authors.
Yeah, so I guess I've got quite a few. One of my really big ones is Virginia Woolf. So I first read Virginia Woolf when I was 19. I read the book Mrs. Dalloway, and that was at an age during which I was probably particularly sort of vulnerable to influence. You know, I was like I was kind of looking for people to be influenced by, and that book is still very much part of the kind of DNA of my writing. I really love the way she talks about people's kind of deep emotional lives, but particularly the way that those emotional lives interact with the broader rhythms of the city. So that's a really big one for me. Apart from that, I really, really love Zadie Smith. She's a long time influence, particularly her novel NW was one of the novels on which I really emulated mine. And then I suppose the final one would be Gabriel Garcia Marquez, particularly 100 Years of Solitude, but I'll also love In the Time of Cholera. And I think I love those books for how sort of like wild and ambitious and inventive they are, but also so accessible in many ways, like really, really kind of juicy stories. You know, I really like in his work that he's got like proper like storytelling chops, you know, and that's something that I really aspire to.
Well, we're going to play an audio extract from 100 Years of Solitude.
One night, after several months of lost wandering through the swamps, far away now from the last Indians they had met on their way, they camped on the banks of a stony river, whose waters were like a torrent of frozen glass. Years later, during the Second Civil War, Colonel Aureliano Buendia tried to follow that same route in order to take Rio Hacha by surprise, and after 6 days of traveling, he understood that it was madness. Nevertheless, the night on which they camped beside the river, his father's host had the look of shipwrecked people with no escape. But their number had grown during the crossing, and they were all prepared, and they succeeded, to die of old age. José Arcadio Buendía dreamed that night that right there a noisy city with houses having mirror walls rose up. He asked what city it was, and they answered him with a name that he had never heard, that had no meaning at all, but that had a supernatural echo in his dream. Macondo.
100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Haven't read that in about 35 years, must go back to it. Oisin, give us a favourite TV show.
So for me, I mean, it's a classic example, but for me it's The Simpsons. It was in its sort of like peak when I was a kid, so you know, watched it all the time then. But I think that the best seasons really stand up so well. It's obviously, you know, incredibly so funny, so witty, such like sharp kind of cultural, social commentary. But also, I think, like for me, it's the sort of emotional resonances which still really do it for me, particularly the sort of relationship between Homer and Lisa and Marge and Bart. Like I find like some of that just so beautiful, heart-wrenching, and really actually still, you know, influences my work. Like I really like that combination of like, you know, just like incredibly sharp humor, but with like a real emotional heart behind it.
Let's hear a little bit from season 7 of The Simpsons, where Bart, Lisa and Maggie are fostered by Ned Flanders.
Well, children, it's Saturday night, so what say we let our hair down and play bombardment?
Yay!
Of Bible questions.
Yay!
Which version shall it be?
St. James!
The Vulgate of St. Jerome!
Vulgate it is! Okay, for one gold star, what Persian king exempted the Levites from taxation? Rightio!
Well?
I know!
No, son, we gotta let Bart and Lisa get one. Come on, this one's easy.
We give up.
Well, guess. Book of Revelations, fire-breathing lion's head, tail made out of snakes. Who else is it gonna be?
Jesus?
Jeez! Oh, don't you kids know anything? The serpent of Rehoboam? The well of Zohasadar? The bridal feast of Beth Chedruharizeb?
Wait, that's the kind of thing you should start learning at baptism.
Actually, you see, we are never baptized.
Nettie!
The Simpsons from 1995, when it was good.
Yeah.
We always finish, Oisin, by asking our guests on the Culture Club for what we call a cultural buried treasure. And you've gone for a TV show called The Comeback. Not familiar with it. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so The Comeback it's a TV show that I really, really adore. And it's basically, it's a bit of a cult classic, I suppose, but it there's only two seasons of it. The first one in 2005 and the second one 10 years later in 2015. And it stars Lisa Kudrow, who's best known for playing Phoebe in Friends. And she was also a writer on the show. And it's a sort of mockumentary about a washed up actress who was in a famous sitcom in the 90s and is now launching a comeback to be, you know, cast in a new sitcom. And, you know, it's played by Lisa Kudrow. And I guess I would say maybe for fans of Curb Your Enthusiasm, maybe for fans of Arrested Development, it's sort of a similar style, similar tone of humor. But it's incredibly, I mean, it's really, really funny, really quite dark in ways. It's quite painful to watch at times, but, you know, really laugh out loud funny. But the character that she plays, it's a character called Valerie Cherish, and she's incredibly kind of infuriating and lovable. And the show, again, like, it packs a real emotional punch, particularly towards the end. I'd say it's really worth sticking with until the end.
We have a clip from it, so, because this is from season two, with Lisa Kudrow as Valeria Cherish and Damien Young as her husband, Mark Berman.
I was your cheerleader.
Well, I was there for you, Mark. Okay, all those boring firm dinners, and I'm sorry, but they were. What is it that your company makes? Well, whatever it is, I'm sure no one's going to manage your portfolio better than my husband, Mark.
No one asked you to do that.
Right, just like no one asked me to make sure Francesca ate. Right, but I did. I sat there at that dinner table long after you threw up your hands and went into the other room and watched a game. I sat there and I made sure that she ate. That was me, okay, making your house a home. I did that, okay? And I did that while I was shooting the most challenging show of my life.
Making my house a home? Making my house a home? You had 300 strangers wreck my home. Every time I had to use the bathroom, there was some fat crew guy in there.
Okay, the same crew that I got your nephew Tyler a job on? That crew?
Oh, come on. That was about you manipulating me, and it's always about you.
Okay, it's called The Comeback. Where can you find that?
I think it's on Now TV, but I'm not totally sure. It's a HBO show. I think you can get it on Now TV.
Okay, that's a very interesting way to finish. Oisin McKenna, it has been great having you on the Culture Club. Thank you very much for taking the time. And best of luck with sales of Evenings and Weekends, your new novel. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much. It's lovely to be here.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.